Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good afternoon. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So this is live call-in radio. You want to talk about the stock market, your portfolio, some hot tip that you received on the internet. Yeah, those are highly reliable.
Always.
You can good give stuff. Us a call. Got an open line here, 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. And Paul will put you on the board, and I promise to do a better job this week than last so that you don't sit around as long as some of our very faithful, persistent listeners last time. I'm embarrassed about how long some of them sat there last week. But anyway, we will, Paul can talk to me in the headset and wake me up.
Save us again. That's right.
Yeah, that's right.
Keep us
that'll
on
working.
Track.
800-465-8770. This is a live call-in radio show for Investor Resources. So one thing about doing a show on the market is that there is no boredom.
Never. Yeah.
If the market was boring, nobody would invest because the returns wouldn't be there. What's boring is when there's no volatility. Well, and you say, well, yeah, I don't like volatility. Well, you need volatility in order for prices to go up, which means you have to be ready to handle them when they go down.
Which they do. It does go both ways. And people love that upward volatility. That's always exciting. But the downward stuff, yeah, not so much.
Yeah, there's so many things that interact that you just kind of say, well, which one should I pay attention to? It reminds me of an interview with a client back in somewhere around 05 or so. And there next to my desk is a six-shelf bookcase full of investment books. And he said, you know, I think I can do this myself. Which one of these should I read?
Right, right.
Just pick one. You know, it's a good start.
But then finish the rest of them. Yeah.
So, yeah. It's a little more complicated than just the books. One of the things that has changed, well, at least it's on its way to a change, and that's interest rates. And you're thinking, finally, the bank's going to pay me something for the money in my savings account. Don't count on that anytime soon.
They did say it, but they haven't done it yet. And that's what you need to watch. Watch what they do, not what they say.
So interest rates are the lifeblood of an economy. And low interest rates make borrowing cheap. So a business is able to borrow money at a low cost, can expand inventory, can expand operations with more buildings, with more employees, and more employees in a bigger business all means more taxes. So, I mean, that's all good for the government. They get a little greedy at times, but low interest rates generally are viewed as a positive for economic expansion, for employment. More jobs we have, the more people have money to spend things, economy gets bigger, they save money, wages kind of go up. You know, if there's plenty of people who don't have a lot of skills, wages don't go up very much. We had an expanding economy, not a lot of wage increases last decade, but we're getting wage increases now. Unfortunately, we're getting them with higher inflation than the wage increases. People who are willing to go to work have more leverage now about the terms and conditions of employment than they have since the 70s, I think, when unions were in their heyday.
Probably. And this one isn't union driven. It's just driven by employers trying to get anybody to come to work. And they're starting to bid against each other for people who will come in and do a good job for them. And if you have somebody like that, already in-house, you're going to, you're thinking about bumping their wages because they're looking around too to see if there's something a little better out there right now.
Well, you think, well, that's, you know, maybe that's not my business, but it is affecting most everybody. My sure. goodness, you can't get a trucker drive a truck to truck driver to show up and drive a truck, and we're short something like 80,000 truck drivers can haul drive semis. You know, that's across the country, but there's plenty of trucks, plenty of stuff to be moved. But for various reasons, some of it is people have COVID. Some of it is regulations like the state of California. If you are a truck driver, now you're in an enclosed environment by yourself.
For the most part, that's a fact, yeah.
And they want you to be vaccinated and wear a mask in order to get onto the port of L.A.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Somebody... You know, hasn't left the office very recently. I mean, just know how a truck driver operates. Anyway, interest rates are going to rise, according to the Federal Reserve president and the consensus of the board. We are going to see higher interest rates, and right. we expect to see that occur in March. That's what they've told us. Interest rates, we know, have been suppressed, depressed, repressed. I mean,
all
they've
of
been
that
stomped
stuff,
on.
Yes. Yeah. They've been very artificially low, any way you look at it. Right?
So the Fed's official rate is 0 to 1/4%. And they're going to raise it by 0.25%. And that's going to whack inflation at its toenails anyway and knock it off its course.
Right.
The Russians understood inflation, and last month they went from zero interest rate to almost 6%. It was because inflation was running in the high fives. You know, and that's not the overhead hand slap. That was like 5.7 inflation rate. So they went to 6 or close to it. That's going to put a dent in inflation. But going from 0 to 1/4, I think inflation is going to continue until the Fed gets serious about it. Now, there is some discussion in there on the financial press that the Fed's plan to raise rates 3 times this year, 0.25% at a time, may find it being 0.5%, at least to start. Others are saying they need 6 interest rate hikes this year and maybe 8 to put a stop to inflation. That would slow things down.
That would slow things down a lot. And the danger is maybe too much. We don't want anything like what Russia did. We don't want a 6% interest rate change overnight. That's what collapses an economy, unless your government is in charge of what the economy does anyway, which is, of course, the Russian economy. We don't run like that, and we don't want a recession to set in. So we need, I think, a gradual approach. As long as it's going to continue, that's what everybody needs to know.
But we actually have an economy. Russia's nothing more
true.
Than a,
that's true.
Russia's nothing more than a gas station masquerading as an economy.
Yeah, that's about it. That's a fact. Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know that they had a housing shortage and people trying to buy houses with very low interest rates. I mean, I don't know that, but we certainly do. And if interest rates, the Fed went to 6, housing market would stop. It would collapse.
Yeah, brakes would be on. Yeah, that's too much too fast. The Fed said they're not going to do that. I hope that's correct. I hope they don't panic. I hope they don't go too fast, but I hope they do get serious about getting on their program to raise interest rates and continue doing it, because they've been scared out of it a couple of times already.
So if you want to join us, we do have an open phone line. The magic number is 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. Well, with rising rates, there's been some slowdown in the stock market of late. Apparently the Santa Claus rally ran into a problem when Rudolph came down with COVID and Santa had to return home early. So the market, instead of continuing up in January, has kind of rolled over.
That definitely did stop. And, you don't see that a lot, really, where the new year comes and the year changes, the calendar turns over, which really shouldn't be an event for the stock market. But, boy, this year, what a difference. The Santa Claus rally ended promptly. Oof.
Well, and actually, there's been some development leading up to that. We've talked about this off and on over the past year. If we go back to December of 2020, so this is just over a year ago, the number of stocks on the New York Stock Exchange that were trending above the 200-day moving average was 78% of them. Mm-hmm. Friday, it was 27%.
It's a big shift. That's a big shift.
One of the things that's been confusing for investors is the Dow's been going up, the NASDAQ index has been going up, the S&P 500 index has been going up, and then you look at data like this, how many stocks are moving above the 200-day moving average, which is considered the bear territory benchmark, and the number of them below it has been continually increasing. While, which means the number of stocks really struggling has been getting larger and larger and larger, while the index are going on, everything's coming up roses.
Everything's fine. And if you look just under the surface, things just haven't been that well. Things have not been looking well, good. The market has been very volatile underneath the big large cap tech stocks at the top. And most people don't see that because they just look at that, they just watch whatever the NASDAQ's doing or whatever the S&P or the Dow is doing. But underneath that, the weakness has been building. Nothing that says, hey, run for the exits. We have we're heading for a crash here. But it's not been as strong as the return on the major indices would indicate.
Why don't we go take a break right now? I think we're a little early, but I'm sitting here looking at the next subject, and I'm thinking, you're going to want to cut me off.
Yeah. Okay, we won't. We will. We'll get out of here right now. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have a monthly market update. The next one is on the schedule for February 5th. That's Saturday, February 5th, 9 o'clock in the morning. If you'd like to get registered for that, go to iriradio.com. That's iriradio.com. Go to the webinar page and give that registration link a click. You're going to get an email back, and then on February 5th, just click that link. You will be live online with us. You'll be able to look at the charts we're looking at. We always cover current market conditions, what's going on, some other educational things, and then we always have plenty of time for your questions. If you have questions about what's going on in the market, if you have questions about individual securities you have in your portfolio, that's a really good opportunity to get a second opinion. We'll take a look at it. You can see the charts that we're looking at on whatever it is you're wondering about, something you're wondering whether you should get rid of it or something you're thinking about buying. Either way, you can go to iriradio.com and register for that. We'd be glad to talk to you today about any of those subjects also. Give us a call here at 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
So I'm telling you right now, only the strong survive. Only the strong survive.
Yeah, only the strong survive. That's certainly true in the market, and sometimes that means you've just simply got a strong stomach to handle the volatility that is there, and you're committed to what you actually have in the portfolio. And that can be a real challenge, particularly if most investors don't have serious stop losses to protect their gains. And when we're looking at that, some of the things that happen in a person's portfolio are actually predetermined by the way their portfolio got structured. And most people's portfolio, if they're using a website, Vanguard, Schwab, Fidelity, Edward Jones, American Funds, it really doesn't matter.
Any robo-advisor, right.
Yeah, any robo-advisor. Well, it doesn't even have to be a robo-advisor. They can just go to, say, Vanguard and say, I'm a new investor, and how do I set up my account? They have a questionnaire for you.
Sure.
They have guidance. And then if you're working with a local financial advisor in the little corner office around the corner from wherever you live, and you go in there and get some help because you really want to see somebody face to face, well, fate mask to mask today.
yep. Much more likely,
So you're going to go through a series of questions. And I did that this week with a new client. And I have to ask these questions. How do you view yourself as an investor? Now, we have consolidated the 10 to 20 question list to how do you view yourself as an investor? It's a one question questionnaire. And the answer was conservative. And I said, okay, well, we need to talk about what that means. Because when you identify yourself as a conservative investor, according to financial best practices today, that means you are going to be the proud owner of a ton of bonds. You thought you were coming in to buy stocks, but you, as a conservative investor, are going to get a ton of bonds because you basically say you're interested in preservation of capital with a focus on current income, and some growth would be nice. Yeah, that'd be nice. But that typically means you're going to get a mandatory allocation to bonds regardless of interest rates without anybody explaining that as interest rates rise, your bonds will lose money. Now, is that why you're there?
So, somehow that explanation never gets made. It's just that, well, these are there to protect your portfolio. And in fact, the older you are, the more bonds you're going to get, even though they're really not going to protect the portfolio.
So on the other end of that equation is you say, as this gentleman did, well, I'm not aggressive. I mean, I'm 65 for Pete's sake. It's like, well, if you said you were aggressive, that means something else. That means that you really want your account to grow and some income would be okay, but that's not why I'm here. So in that case, you seeking maximum returns, you're going to get close to 80% stocks, no matter which way the market's going, up or down. You're an aggressive investor, and by definition, you're in here for the long haul. So it doesn't matter what the stocks do today or tomorrow. And if this was, say, a year ago, and you're an aggressive investor, it's highly likely that you may have been put into an investment along with a ton of other people, the ARK Innovation Fund. The ticker's ARKK. It had a phenomenal year coming out of COVID. Now, before that, nobody was paying any attention to it. But, man, once it started racking up gains.
And it did.
The people just piled on. Now, a lot of people were still frightened. We talked about this, too. We're still frightened, left over from the 08 market crash, and they're finally saying, I'm being left out. I'm on the sidelines, and I don't own anything, and this is making money. I can catch up really quickly when I'm making 50% or more a year. And so they piled in at the top. And since November of, not this year, November of the prior year, ARKK is down, no, that's November of this last year, and is down 43%. From February of 21, it's down 55%. Yep, that's the aggressive investor who is just there for the long, long haul. The question right now is, how many of these people are going to keep sticking around before they just start bailing out and accelerating current losses in the market? We don't know. So we look at this and say, yeah, I really doubt you want to be a conservative investor committed to a lot of bonds in a rising interest rate marketplace. Because when you think about it, that doesn't make a lot of sense. And yet we know from a risk management standpoint, you don't want to be classified as an aggressive investor in your 60s or 70s or Lord help you in your 80s. I mean, you'd think, okay, so what do you do? Well, there's really not a lot of easy answers for you when you're using modern portfolio theory. You just kind of blend the problems of both those answers into something that hopefully you can sleep through the turmoil.
And that's what they want you to do. If a broker hands you that pie chart, that's what they want you to do. Just sleep through whatever's going on, because their portfolio, their asset allocation isn't going to help you in times of a falling market. Your portfolio is going to get hit just like the market is, to the same degree. And their fix is, well, just wait till it comes back. And that's all there is. There is no protection other than long, long periods of time, which, of course, if you're already 65, you don't have 15 years to wait for your portfolio to come back to where it was. You're retired now, which is why we say it's more important to protect that capital than it is to stay with some arbitrary diversification allocation, because long-term historical returns say that's a good idea. You need to look at what's going on now and adapt to the market we're in, not the markets that have gone by in the past.
So we have adapted. All of our investment models operate under a different investment policy, where there's a balance between capital appreciation and current income. As a portfolio strategy, this typically seeks to strike a balance between risk and return. Well, the gentleman across this said, well, that makes sense. That's what I want. Allocating more to equities in times of lower risk and more to bonds or cash in times of higher risk. Basically, our portfolios go to 100% cash, 100% bonds, 100% equities. They can be 100% anything, depending upon market conditions instead of your age. What does your age have to do with market risk?
That's it. That's the key. It's based on what's going on in the market, not based on how old you are or how you feel about what you think your investing strategy should be. Those don't address what's going on in the market. And that's the only thing that really counts. What's going on in the market, that's going to drive returns. That's what drives the risk. How risky is your portfolio right now? And those are the things that need to be addressed, not how you feel about it and not how old you are.
So here briefly, here's the phone number if you want to talk to us. We're coming up on another break here in a few minutes, but we still have half an hour ahead of us. It's 800-465-8770. So along the same vein, I had another conversation with a client this week with regard to how do you manage risk and taking a realistic look at the market. And one of the things that has happened when we came out of COVID is a lot of things, particularly technology that was addressing the work from home, stay at home. We don't want you on the street talking to your neighbor.
Right.
That whole environment, a lot of those technology stocks were skyrocketing. Basically, the stock prices were on a straight up trajectory.
Off the
and
charts.
Those who owned them were tickled pink. Now the question is, how can those companies continue to maintain that kind of growth when work from home is, while it's still dominant, it's not mandatory anymore, and you can go to the grocery store, you can go to the doctor's office, you can start to go out and go to a restaurant, do other things. The stay at home and find some tech company to entertain yourself, that's changed. And there are a number of companies that, while they were very profitable right after the COVID shutdown, they're backing up. Their prices are falling on. That's part of what we see going on in the market today.
Sure.
This stuff is unwinding. Now, one of the companies that probably is not going to collapse, it's the apple of so many people's eye.
Right?
And that's Apple. I mean, that was a bad use of an old adage. But when you take a look at Apple coming out of COVID, I mean, that stock just went up and up and up and up until it didn't. And then since August, September of 2020, this is more than a year now, it has gone sideways. It's in what we'd call a trading range. And every now and then it bumps a little higher, but it's not skyrocketing up like it did in the past. And recently, it is rolling over. Now, if you're an individual investor, you don't see what's happening with it because you're probably not paying attention, besides which you love Apple. You love Apple as much as your spouse and your kids. Well, maybe not as much as your kids. You might like Apple even more because you can shut Apple off. Can't always do that with your kids. But one of the things that's really changed with Apple, and the reason it probably won't go down tremendously like some of the, like Zoom, for instance, is that the number of corporations or institutional investors who own Apple has gone from more than 90% a couple of years ago to 56%. Now, when you get professional investors holding a big company like that down in the 50 range, they can't sell it anymore because it's part of an index. And they have to do something to track that index, or they have to have something in their quarterly reports that says, of course we own Apple. We don't like the stock, but we got to own it. And so we have it because we know you'll sell us if you don't see it on the quarterly report. We own Apple because we have to, not because we want to.
In fact, Apple, companies like Apple, once you get to that $1 trillion range, they become an index unto themselves. And the explosive growth that they have seen up till now is really hard to come by. You really need a significant disrupting product of some kind or service to make that huge growth again, because it's so big to begin with. Now, that size is one of the reasons we're not going away, but it's also one of the reasons the explosive growth phase of that company is probably done, barring something big happening, because companies mature. And once they do, you don't have that huge growth, that huge innovation cycle. And even if it comes, you're pushing such a gigantic tanker around now, it's really tough to make the company move.
Well, and I mean, that's the point. That's one of the reasons people say you should be in small cap stocks, because small caps where the money's made. Unless, of course, you've been hanging around small caps this last year where you haven't made any money at all.
Nothing going on right now. That's right.
Yeah, it's just as long as Apple's been in this trading range since August, September of 2020, the small caps have been in a trading range not quite as long, but certainly we're coming up on the year anniversary of going nowhere until Friday, when small cap index just crashed through the bottom. And now from a technical standpoint, the real support is a long way down. And so we're going to have to see what continues into next week.
Nobody wants to see that. Yeah. Nobody wants to see that broken down. But you're right, Don, it could just as likely continue through next week. Who knows where this pullback is going to end. But our segment's going to end right now. So we're going to have to get out of here, take a break. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have a weekly email newsletter that we can review. If you'd like to begin receiving that, just send us an email. Send that email to help@iriradio.com. That is help@iriradio.com. Just put week in review in the subject line, and we need your first and last name in the body of the email, and we will get you set up, and you'll begin receiving that on Monday. That is a quick look at what's gone on in the financial news for the previous week or so, and kind of let you know what's important and the things you can probably just safely ignore, because there's lots of noise out there. If you would like to talk to us this afternoon, give us a call, 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. You are listening to Investor Resources here on AM 770 KTTH. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Hey, well, all right, sir. Here we go there. What are you going to give for? I've got $600 down here now, $10 and now, $25 and now, $35 and now, $50 now, $60. Will you give me $60 now, $75, $75, another $85 on the bottom there?
Yeah, it happens electronically now instead of watching all those guys on the New York Stock Exchange do just that. You know, what do you give me for it? It's a bidding war, and it's always a bidding war when it comes to stocks. And it seems as though some of that bidding war is going on in the inflation scenario. What will it be? Mm-hmm. We don't know. And it Perry, part of this research you did going for the today's show, I hadn't forgotten about this story about the six blind men and the elephant.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sure everybody's heard it, but a quick refresh. You got six blind guys. They're each trying to figure out what an elephant is, and they aren't moving around it. They're just touching what's available. And so one's got the tail, thinks it's a rope, and the others, you know, depending on the flat side or the trunk or the legs, you know, it's all different. And inflation's kind of the same thing. It depends upon what you are dealing with. And in the household budget, one of the biggest increases in inflation has been gasoline. It's up 50% in a year. And used cars and trucks are up substantially, used cars especially. But there is a change coming, and it won't necessarily make people happy. Now, one of the things about inflation is the government has Mickey Mouse the data to make it look better than it is.
You know, no, you mean they're fudging the numbers a little bit there, just kind of moving them around? Massaging, yeah. I think it's called. Just massaging the numbers, yeah.
They don't like it if you try to do that on your tax return
or your
corporate financial report. They don't like that. But when it comes to telling us what the government's doing with the money and how they're operating, yeah, a little
different
fudging
story
here and there.
Yeah.
Who's going to chase them down?
Right.
But the Bureau of Labor Statistics keeps track of inflation data, and they have de-emphasized the reality of it. But a change is coming. They are going to unwind some of that stuff and start reporting numbers in a new way. Now, I don't have a lot of examples, and we're not going to take time to explore this today. But for new car prices, for instance, since 2009, the rise in prices on new cars is 11.8. The new calculation, trying to bring a sense of reality into the numbers, it is actually closer to 15.9, almost a 50% increase in reality instead of what BLS has been BSing us about.
If they can soft soap those numbers, it takes the pressure off the politicians, of course. No, of course inflation is not a problem. And right now the problem is everyone knows that currently it is. I mean, there are too many things going up too fast right now. And there's plenty of arguments on how long it's going to last and what's driving this primarily. But this article I thought was very good at pointing out that it's not one thing. There's a lot of moving parts here. And it's not just the CPI. Everyone knows that the things that affect a personal economy aren't all reflected in the CPI. So inflation is not just, is the CPI going up and down? There are many more things involved there.
Well, and unfortunately, inflation affects the lower income segments worse.
Sure.
Because they have less discretionary income and they are more dependent on things like gasoline and groceries.
And when that starts eating up a bigger portion of your personal economy, there's nothing else you can do about it. You're going to buy those, which means everything else, you get less money to use for anything else in your personal economy. And that's tough.
And so we do have some things that will slow down inflation. First of all, the government handouts have come to an end. So any surplus income that came from not working is some of it's been saved. So there's still the lag, that's going to work its way out. That'd be less spending. That means the economy slows some. That's not news. We've seen that forecast for some time.
Right.
The other side of that equation just went out the other side of my brain.
Well, there is some evidence that is true, that all of that government money that hit the hit personal economies is drying up. I think we talked about it last week or the week before. The number of credit card applications is increasing, and they think that reflects the number of people who have spent all of their CARES Act money and anything else that came out, and now they're having to prop up their personal economy again, and they're going back to credit. I wish they weren't going back to credit, but I'm glad that all of the at least some of the cash that was slopping around out there on the market is getting used up and soaked up.
So you want to talk to us, the number is 800-465-8770. You want to talk to us during the week, we do that too, but that's a different phone number. It's 800-317-9119. What slipped out of my brain came back in on the other side. It's the housing number in inflation.
Oh, yeah.
Is a number that works on a five-quarter lag. So, you know, just a little over a year to incorporate the numbers of rising prices. So house prices have been rising for the last five quarters, and yet they're not fully reflected in the CPI numbers. So as much as the Fed would like to suppress inflation, it's going to be fighting against housing prices for more than a year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if interest rates rise fast enough, that'll slow mortgage applications. It'll slow house construction. The number of buyers will dissipate fairly quickly. And therein lies the secret to stopping inflation. It is a self-killing phenomenon. right. higher prices reach a point where they're high enough that people say, not in my budget.
Right, right. That's a saying in the commodities market. The biggest cure for high prices is high prices, because people just decide, nope, not paying that. And that's when the economy begins to slow, and that's how you get rid of inflation.
Because it builds inventory. If a yep. provider can't sell the product, what do? They put it on sale. How do you clear the shelves so you can get something that people want to buy? You got to clear this stuff, and that's, you know, that's all about sales brochures that still come through the mail. There are not as many as before the internet, but there's still a bunch of them there. The other thing that will bring this down is if we actually get through this recent rise in COVID infections, that would bring more people back to work. And if more people are working, then the supply chain can work its way out. But if nobody's there to move it from the ports to distributor, warehouse, to the retail store, put it on the shelves, the supply chain's going to stay clogged up. That keeps inventory low. Demand is there. It keeps prices up. Once inventory catches up, prices come down because there's plenty of supply. Inflation is a supply-demand equation.
Always, exactly. And the supply chain is probably going to come back online. I've already seen people writing about just watch. A year from now, there's going to be articles about too much inventory because we overshot on the downside here. They're going to overshoot on the upside too once they gear up and everything starts arriving finally. We're going to have an excess of inventory, and that's what can help with the inflation. But that's not going to happen right away. It's going to be a while before that works out, and then we're going to have to work our way back to a more natural equilibrium if we can keep the government from making any more harsh moves in the economy, which is a big if.
So as the stock market's been rolling over with the collapse of the Santa rally, that this expansion of the Omicron infection and people having to isolate themselves is part of the problem in the market, as well as what we mentioned just a few minutes ago, with things got overpriced with speculation in a very narrow part of the market due to the COVID work from home, stay at home problems. And that has to unwind itself because many of those companies and the prices of the stock don't make any sense when you start looking at the profit margins, the sales they're making. Peloton's a good example of a company that was doing, it's an IPO, had a phenomenal run because it came out just in advance of the COVID deal. People had to stay home. They bought these expensive machines. But I understand that most people would rather go to the gym to work out. Not so much that they can't do it at home, but it's lonely at home.
And just like that supply chain, stocks work the same way. They get overdone on the upside, and right now it looks like some of them are being overdone on the downside. Some of the stay-at-home stocks that have been sold off are sold off far more than would make any sense, but that's the way this thing goes. You overshoot on the upside, then you're going to overshoot on the downside, and then it'll find an equilibrium back to closer to reality than we are right now. But right now we're living through that some of that realignment post-COVID.
Well, and some of the things that a year ago made absolutely no sense are working today. I mean, we have said for a couple of years, and actually for the most part since summer of 11, emerging market stocks make no sense.
Right.
Guess what's doing really well right now?
Right.
International stocks are actually a place to be. Well, Mortimer Heard, who'd thunk it?
I mean, okay. Who'd thunk it's right. We've got them in our portfolio, and we haven't had them in there in a long, long time because it hasn't made any sense. But when they get to the top of the list, when the returns and the cash flows, that's where the money's heading to. That's when you add them back in, and they'll stay there as long as they're profitable. And when they're not, they're going to go too. And hopefully something else will have rotated up, and it usually does. But it makes for the need to be willing to make those changes in a portfolio that you're not going to get in that pie chart. They're not going to make that change. Whatever emerging market representation you have, it's not going to increase when things are going well and decrease when things are going poorly. It's just going to be static. And that doesn't do you any good. Doesn't do you any good at all. We are up against our final break of the afternoon here. I'd like to remind everyone that on Saturday, February 5th, we have our next market update. You can register for that by going to iriradio.com. That is iriradio.com. Just head to the webinar page and give that registration link a click. If you'd like to talk to us this afternoon, we still have plenty of time to get your call on the board. Give us a call, 800-465-8770. That is 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Well, let's take it higher, and that's what everybody wants to see happen in the market. Just take it higher, higher, higher. We love to see it go higher, and we just hate to struggle with it when that's not going on. But we do have a caller from Olympia. David, you're on the line with Don and Perry. You have the air, sir.
Hi. Hi, Don and Perry.
Howdy.
Something tells me that you probably agree with Warren Buffett that the future doesn't bode well for, say, the cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, and assuming the inevitable collapse, we're looking at the top two, Ethereum and Bitcoin, maybe about $1 trillion in market cap. So where do you think that money's going to go when that happens, and do you have a clue as to when, assuming you believe it will collapse on itself, when you think that might happen? I know that's crystal ball talk.
I wish I had a guess on that, but I absolutely don't have a guess on when. I think it's definitely going to change. It's gotten so huge. The whole crypto sector, like you said, $1 trillion. It's gotten so big that it's no longer looking like it's just going to dry up and blow away. But the bigger it gets, the more pressure there's going to be coming from governments around the world for intervention, and we're going to monitor this and we're going to tax this, and that's going to change the nature of everything in the cryptocurrency field, and that'll be big, one of the big driving factors in repricing everything. So watch for government regulation begin to sneak in, and that's going to be a big sign for there could be trouble ahead.
And there are a number of governments that are doing digital coin research and preparation, testing it out, see how that can go. That's part of the change in the financial world, which I think is inevitable. And when the regulated coins come out, these unregulated ones are going to have a much more difficult time functioning. The people who are using them to avoid taxes, or particularly here in the United States anyway, they're going to get caught up with. The IRS has been cracking down on that for some time. Honduras, I believe, is the country that went to digital coin, and their currencies just collapsed as a result of using Bitcoin. Not a digital, but to convert to Bitcoin, and the whole thing is collapsing. Their currency traded at 52.5 cents this last week on the dollar.
On the dollar, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's disastrous. And if we look, I don't have Bitcoin on my charts, but I do have the ETF GBTC Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, and which is, I think it's a lot of that is future stuff they're using on it. But in any event, that does trade. It's a legal exchange traded fund that you can buy in the local account. And on an annualized basis, since its peak last February, it's only down 59% on an annual return basis. That in itself is going to take a lot of people out of it, and the more they sell and bail, the more downside there is, until you reach some sort of level that some big money steps back in. And I have no idea how low is. When things start trending down, the bottom is kind of like being in a glass bottom boat out in the ocean. I mean, you know there's something down there somewhere, but you don't know how many miles away.
Where is the bottom? Yeah,
yeah, in that big trench over.
It's so amazing. There's nothing behind it. It's just pure speculation.
Correct.
That's
correct. All it is.
Absolutely right. And that's why, if anybody asks me, should they be in Bitcoin, Ethereum, any of those currencies, it's always, my answer is always the same, you know, the same amount of money you would gamble in Vegas. It's got to be money you would be, you wouldn't have a second thought about it if you lost it, because it could go away just as fast as it could double. And there's really no way to tell which way that's going. It's just the winds of change in cryptocurrency blow quickly, and you can never really have an idea what direction they're coming from.
Several major firms have gone to the SEC with proposals for trading entities for Bitcoin and the competitors, competing firms. But the SEC, while they were looking at some of them, they got really close to approval, and then they shut them down. They said, no, we're not going to do this for the reason that you just mentioned, David, and that is there's nothing behind them. So let's assume you're an investor and you just lost $40,000, and who do you sue because something was misrepresented? You don't. There's nobody to sue. Where are the headquarters for this operation? Well,
good question. Yeah. No answer, unfortunately.
Well, anyway, even when the mafia does a pump and dump scheme on some penny stock, at least there's some rinky-dink company behind it. And here, there's just nothing at all.
There's nothing at all. That's correct. It is just pure speculation.
I'm just amazed how long it's gone with nothing there. It's not useful. I can't buy anything with it. The underlying blockchain technology would be great for a national, you know, a sovereign currency if they wanted to go digital.
Right.
That's technology. It has nothing to do with the price of Bitcoin.
Correct. Correct.
And that blockchain work is in, it's the fundamental in the DeFi world where when it's part of the reason the banks this quarter are struggling is that they are losing customers and they are losing business through innovation of smaller firms. A firm, AFFIRM, is a company that will finance purchases. In fact, you can finance something, small items on Amazon with a firm. Well, that's
exactly.
Money that used to go to credit cards and the banks made money. Well, a firm is taking that business away from them. And there are others that are doing that. PayPal will lend you money to buy stuff. Well, that is interrupting the normal financial services business. And it's putting pressure on profits. And in fact, in my end of week deal, I just finished writing this morning, I said the smaller banks, they can't compete with this. They're losing customers. If they can't figure out how to adapt to this new innovation process that's going on in the financial business, they are either going to be merger prospects or they're going to be bankruptcy prospects. And now the Fed's not going to let the banks go bankrupt, or if they do, they step in and somebody else on Monday morning will have their name on the door.
A lot of new branches, yeah.
Well, we saw that happen with the housing market collapse when the mortgage business went under. We had banks here in the Puget Sound region that belly up overnight. Monday morning, there was a new sign on the door. Your account was still good because the Fed's not going to let them go down. We're not going back to the 30s. That's what the FDIC and the friendly taxpayers' money is worth. And that's what it's for. So we don't know how that's going to work out. I do think that the central bank development of a digital coin will basically put most of these things out of business. And some of them are there just to see if they can soak up money from innocent investors. And it's just a scam. So Bitcoin, I don't think is a scam, but if you lose your secret password,
good luck with that. Yeah,
you're scammed now.
Yep. Yep.
There's no place to go.
But there's still that $1 trillion there that then needs to go somewhere.
And where it goes is anybody's guess at this point in time.
Yep.
That's what I wanted you guys to tell me, where it was going to go.
Because you wanted to go stand in line, get ready to receive it all, right?
Let's get there. That'll
right.
Do it.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks for the call, David. That was a great call. We'll have to see if we can shine up our crystal balls and come up with a better answer next week.
And, you know, digital currency, you know, we have that already in the United States to a large degree. How many people don't see a paycheck? It's a direct deposit into their account. The number changes. And then you go to the store and you buy something with your credit card or your smartwatch or your cell phone. There's no money that changes hands. It's just digital ledger readings that change. It's already digital, but it's just like David said, it's a sovereign dollar that's using that. But digital currency is pretty much already here. It's just you don't really recognize that that's what it is. But that's what you're doing every time you use a credit card, debit card, get paid, you know, digitally, or have money transferred, direct deposit online. That's a digital move.
Well, that's true. I mean, we get digital pay out of our system ourselves. But in fact, what you remind me of is the 60 Minutes interview of Chairman Powell recently. And the interviewer saying, well, how do you guys, you know, where do you get all this extra money that you've been pumping into the
right?
And he says, well, we just make it. Now, what do you mean you just make? Well, we print it. Well, it's a digital print. We just kind of make it up out of thin air. And he says, you print money out of thin air? And Mr. Powell says, yes.
That's what the Fed does. Yeah, that's it. Always has, right.
Okay. So we're already in a digital world as far as the currency is concerned.
Right.
And Perry, you don't carry cash. I still like to have cash in my pocket.
Right. I very rarely have cash. There's almost nowhere you can't get away. Like my wife's big on estate sales, and most of them take cards now, too. It doesn't matter where you are. You really don't need cash very often, except the local lemonade stand, maybe. That's about it.
Yeah, the kids probably don't have a credit card system.
That's it. Not yet. Not yet. It's coming, but not yet. Yeah.
So what else is coming is the end of our show. You want to talk to us during the week, the number is 800-317-9119. If you don't get our you don't get our email on Mondays, then send us an email, help@iriradio.com. Put help, put week in review in the subject line. We need your first and last name in the body of the email so we can set you up in constant contact. You want to talk to us during the week, we are available, 800-317-9119. We'll look forward to having a conversation with you about your portfolio. Get a free review. Let us give you a second, different kind of analysis of what you hold in your portfolio. And as this clock runs down, we want to wish you a very good week. And God bless you, your family, and, of course, the United States of America. Have a great week.